Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Patino, I am John Schmelk. The way you call us is by dialing 201-939-4513 or going on Twitter and checking out hashtag Giants Chat. We'll hit your messages throughout the show. Yesterday, we kind of did a Giants at the halfway point breakdown. We had Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus join us. We had a great conversation. Well, we have some news today to begin the show with. The Giants making a bunch of roster moves today. The biggest one can only be termed a disappointing one. A player that had a lot of promise in the preseason, played his way into the starting lineup. Darian Thompson will undergo surgery to repair a foot injury that has kept him on the bench since mid-September, and he will be out for the remainder of the season, which means, Paul, it's going to be Nat Burhe, Andrew Adams, and then I guess we'll get a taste of Leon Hall maybe here or there the rest of the way.
That is such a shame because Darian Thompson didn't look like a rookie, John.
Nope.
You know, from the moment he stepped onto the field here, he looked like a guy who knew what he was doing. He understood the pro game and was mature enough to also understand his place in the locker room. So very, 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 very disappointed that he's not going to be available for the rest of the season. However, and let's make this very clear, the Giants secondary has been so much upgraded over what it was last year that despite losing him, they've been able to play pretty darn well over the last month of the season.
Oh, and a big reason is Landon Collins played out of his mind. He was named NFC Defensive Player of the Week. First time a player has led his team in tackles, interceptions, and sacks in a game. I mean, you don't get any better than that, right? I mean, that's pretty darn good. Now, the beauty of it, he's been allowed to play his more natural position, tight to the line of scrimmage. He hasn't been asked to play that center field spot much. Andrew Adams has stepped in. He was named Pro Football Focus's safety, I guess free safety, technically, of the week last week, their highest graded player at that position. So he's done a good job, but you'd always rather have your third round pick in there than an undrafted free agent simply because of the physical difference between their abilities.
Yeah, I think, though, moving forward, you probably will see a little bit more of Nat Burhe sprinkled in there
right.
as he comes back off the concussion protocol. We saw him a little bit the other day against Philly. In fact, he did have a really nice one-to-one tackle that he made the other day.
He's also beat deep once.
Again, I wasn't getting there. I was going for the tackle first, folks. But both Adams and Burhe right. are not the fleetest of foot playing free safety. Neither one of them are your center field ball hawks.
They aren't running 4.5s.
That Darian Thompson
dash,
is. Right. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're just not. They're a little bit of a different style of player. And the Giants have shown that they could adapt to that style of player. And so this isn't horrible, horrible, horrible. It's disappointing, though.
Now, of course, a couple other injury pieces of news out there. Victor Cruz, he talked to Mike Francesa yesterday, said maybe he'll miss a week, but probably not more than that. He'll do his hard to work his butt off to get ready for Monday night. I imagine it'll probably be a game-time decision when the Giants announce whoever their active guys are for that particular game. Justin Pugh's going to miss a few weeks, it looks like. A little bit of time, as I think is the way Ben McAdoo put it.
Yep.
You know, any MCL, usually it's somewhere 2 to 4. I think that's probably a decent way to look at it, but they'll take that week by week. The Giants have not announced a specific timetable. And now to take Thompson's spot on the roster, the Giants have recalled Adam Geddes, somebody who was here last year a bit. He played a lot in the preseason, had some struggles, but he's a veteran, Paul, and generally you can depend on him to know what he's doing.
Well, the other part about Geddes is that he is a guard-slash-center combo.
And is this the tip-off now that it's probably going to be Brett Jones as the starter? Because otherwise they would have to bring up a tackle, right?
I think that, obviously, to me, is the next conclusion you'd have to make, is that it's Brett Jones' job right now to hold on to. And then, of course, if he gets into trouble, at least you have the veteran Geddes there. We know that Newhouse is healthy again because he was in the tight end package the other day.
Yep.
We know that Will Beattie is now acclimated, so they could use him if they wanted to. Both of those guys are primarily tackles.
And Beattie hasn't been active a ton this year.
No. In fact, he's only been in on one play. It was a special teams play against the Redskins. So, but those are both tackles. It made perfect sense for the Giants to activate a guard, given what they had available.
And, of course, you have to live without Justin Pugh, who, according to, again, we had the good interview yesterday. I encourage you to go look at the archive. Sam Monson basically said Justin Pugh in the discussion for best guard in the league this year. That's how well they had him playing. So it's
He's
big
good.
Shoes to fill, and they're going to have to figure that out. Some practice squad news as well. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but we praised the team and the organization for making the right moves with their wide receiver position at the start of the year. They're able to keep Jeremy Davis in the organization by getting him onto the practice squad off the 53. Well, no longer the case. The Chargers have stepped up. They've claimed him off that practice squad and added him to their active roster. So between that and the Geddes call up to the 53, the Giants had two open spots on their practice squad, and they end up bringing in two wide receivers. The first one, Kevin Norwood, 6'2", 210 pounds, has played in 10 regular season games with two starts for the 2014 Seahawks. He was an Alabama draft pick, fourth round, back in 2014. And then the second player they added was Deron Brown, 6'1", 200 pounds, seventh round pick by the Chiefs back in 2015 out of Northern Illinois. He was on the Chiefs practice squad last season. He was waived by the Chiefs on September 3rd and was on the Patriots practice squad for a cup of tea from the 28th to the 1st, September to October. So the Giants making some roster moves, trying to get their group of players where it needs to be for the final eight-game stretch of the season.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the second practice squad player, John, but I know a lot about Norwood because I scouted him a couple of years ago in the 2014 draft. Foot and hip injuries have really sidelined what should have been a very promising career. He was considered a very strong second-day pick in the 2014 draft. And again, because of the injuries that have littered the early part of his career, he has never been able to develop and become what it was that he was expected to be, a guy who could challenge for a starting job in the National Football League. So in my mind, he is of a same talent level or on the same supermarket shelf as a Roger Lewis, who was also projected to be in that second-day range had everything else been clean in his folder.
The difference, though, is that Norwood has been around, and the team, after seeing him in the NFL, has decided to move on from him. Lewis obviously was as much of an unknown commodity as any other drafted player can be.
No doubt. Well, he's damaged goods. He's had two significant injuries.
Correct.
As Norwood has. But here's what I like. Alabama, big-time program.
Yep.
You know he's going to be physical. You know he's going to be willing to block. And quite frankly, the Giants right now are in need of guys to take reps in practice because it's unlikely that even if Victor Cruz plays Monday, he's not going to work this week.
No, probably not.
No.
Probably not. He said he was still sore yesterday. Luckily, it's a lower ankle thing. It's not a higher ankle thing. Those things usually tend to recover a little bit more quickly, which is why, you know, people are hopeful that he'll be able to get back on the field on Monday night against the Bengals. All right, we're going to do a quick run through the Giants. I'm going to do a little bit on the Bengals. Then we're going to get to your calls at 201-939-4513. All right, Paul, let's start with this first. If there's one thing the Giants need to do, whether it's to maintain something they're doing well or get better at something maybe they're doing poorly, pinpoint one or two things that needs to happen for the Giants to repeat their first half, go 5-3 in the second half, go 10-6 and make the playoffs.
The rush defense. It's that simple. If the rush defense continues to perform at the level that it has, because that has such a huge impact not only on them being able to force teams into uncomfortable situations, but it also dramatically helps them in the red zone. So if the rush defense is at least as good as it has been, it has a domino effect in so many other areas, John, that will allow them to continue to be competitive and continue to allow them to succeed. So to me, that's got to be, for me, the one thing that must at least be consistent, if not better.
All right, I'm going to go with winning the turnover battle because the last couple games the Giants have been...
That's a good one.
You know what? I guess they technically weren't up in the turnover battle in the last game. Right? Wasn't it 2-2 at the end of the game? The two early against Philly put the Giants into a good spot to take the lead in that game. And I feel like if you break even on the turnover battle or win it, you're in good shape. And they've done that for the most part during this three-game winning streak. You can't lose it. And that's when you start getting into dangerous territory, which they did so much the first five or so games of this year. So that's the one I'm going to go with. I think that's important. And I think another one, too, Paul, that I think you have to take a look at, if you want to look at something they had to improve on, I think you have to figure out a way to sustain drives better on offense. I mean, even in the 28 points they scored against Philly, two are in a short field. They only had 302 yards of total offense, which is not a great number. They have not been able to sustain drives. I know that's a really broad thing to point your finger at, because there's a lot of pieces to that. It's, you know, running the ball on first and second down. It's converting third down. It's protecting the quarterback. It's all those things together. And look, we've touched on all these little things here or there. But the one thing with this team, Paul, that they have not been able to do consistently, in my opinion, more or less any game this year, is sustain long drives down the field and score touchdowns. How many 80-yard touchdown drives has this team had? Not many. And I think that's something that they need to get better at, because not being able to do that is a recipe for losses.
Well, if your first hope is true and they will continue to get turnovers, they won't need as many 80-yard touchdowns.
Well, assuming you're getting turnovers in plus territory.
Again, usually by odds, turnovers aren't going to be in your own 20 all
the
time.
No, of course.
I would say if there's one thing that has to get better, I'm just going to narrow it a little bit and say the four-minute offense. Because you can't have the defense having to win every game like they have the last three during this winning streak on the field with the clock ticking down, trying to get guys not to score and keep them out of the end zone.
Now, the Ravens, and I know the last three wins, the other team has had a chance to win at the end, but the Ravens was really a, like, low percentage chance. They didn't have a lot of time. They're throwing it from 30, 40 yards away. I'm not going to go nuts on Baltimore. But you would not like to have the situation you had against the Rams and the situation you had against Philly when they were in great position late in the game to get first downs or score touchdowns. So agree absolutely 100%. All right, now, real quick, Cincinnati Bengals, Paul. I've done some work on them. I haven't dove fully in yet, but I've had some extra time. Real quick, this is my take on the Bengals. Very good offense. Good weapons, A.J. Green, Eifert, I like their two running backs. Andy Dalton has played well this year for the most part, but their Achilles heel is their offensive line. They don't run it consistently enough, and Dalton has been under siege the whole year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they're also not the same team on the road.
No, they're not. That's true.
So that's true. I'm already looking at this, and I'm saying, okay, they're out of their comfort zone. Their defense seems to be a lot more aggressive and much more effective with their takeaways and big plays at home than they are on the road. So that in itself is a comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, offensively, I can't tell you what it is about Andy Dalton, but he is a different quarterback when he gets out of that building. And it doesn't make sense because it's an outdoor building. They got bad weather.
I know.
Why should he be so different?
And there's also a stat I looked at. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I left them back in my office. Where his numbers, they combine playoff games and primetime games. When the spotlight is bright, his numbers have not been very good. So now, is that going to carry on to this game? Who knows? Is the road issue going to carry on?
I don't know why.
Who knows? And the other interesting thing in this matchup, I'm not sure if you looked at this yet, I think they've played 9 times the Giants and Bengals. The Bengals lead at 6-3. Mm-hmm. The home team has won every single game.
I did not look at that.
Yes. Home team has won every single game in the Giants-Bengals all-time series, which I thought was interesting.
I think if you want to pick out the one matchup that is perhaps the most perplexing or certainly the one that you know the least about in this game.
Can I guess one on each side of the ball for you? I want to see if you agree with me.
There's one that's really sticks out, like
Tyler Eifert.
That's the one on Giants defense.
Correct, and offensively it's blocking Geno Atkins.
It's Atkins against Brett Jones.
Of course it is. Well, assuming Atkins is going to be over Jones and not over John Jerry.
I would think they would be wise to put him over Brett Jones.
I would think that's probably an accurate statement.
That's usually where he is. Now, that doesn't mean he can't move.
Right.
But he is usually their right defensive tackle, which means he's on the left guard, which means that Brett Jones, who held up real nicely the other day, is going to have to go up against one of the best in the business.
And he is still really good, by the way.
Yeah, he's really good. He is incredibly athletic, quick feet, quick off the snap.
Strong.
Especially, he's only barely 300 pounds.
Yeah, but he's strong.
That's the thing.
And Brett Jones isn't exactly a huge guy.
No, he's got tremendous power for his size. And the other thing that he does extremely well, Geno Atkins is very good technique-wise. And, you know, Brett Jones, who has limited experience, is going up against a guy who has the entire bag of tricks in his pocket. That's a tough, tough, tough matchup for the Giants. And I don't know how you prepare him to go up against the Geno Atkins.
Now, the good news, though, is that the Bengals' defense has not been the same this year. They've been an excellent unit the last 3 or 4 years. One of the reasons they've consistently been in the postseason, not so much this year. They're in the bottom third of the league. Well, they lost a lot of guys. And it happens.
No question. Well, the cap
killed. It's going to happen. Yeah, they had to let a lot of guys in their secondary go. Reggie Nelson no longer there. They lost one of their corners. They didn't have Terrence Newman last year, but they lost him 2 years ago. I'm trying to remember who was playing across from Pac-Man that they lost this year. But they lost somebody else. They lost another safety. They brought back George Aloka. He's one of the safeties they did bring back.
Yes.
But they're not the same defense. And offensively, they're not scoring points, but they're gaining out a lot of yards. So it's an interesting dynamic on that side of the ball as well. So, folks, all that stuff on the table. Give us a call. Anything on your mind with the New York Football Giants, 201-939-4513. Mike in New Jersey has been holding the longest on line number one. He's joining us first on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Mike, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi.
Good.
My question was, it's kind of I have two questions that are kind of similar. Do you think with all these close games, the defense and offense will hold up all season, or do you think it'll wear on them eventually?
How are these close games wearing on you?
Hey, look, Mike, here's the bottom line. The Giants are not going to win every close game. No team wins every close game.
Very difficult.
Last year, it seemed like the Giants lost every close game, one of the reasons they were in the predicament they were in at the end of the season.
Yes.
That wasn't the case. They won a couple close ones, but they lost most of them. That was a big problem. They're going to lose some of these. If you're going to play a field goal game or a 4 or 5 point game every game, eventually your defense is going to give up a score. It's just going to happen. But you hope it doesn't happen often, and so far the defense has done a good job. So would you like the Giants to come out and win a couple games by a couple scores? Sure. But right now the DNA of the NFL, and just look at the point spreads each week. You used to have routinely every week 3-5 or 2-4 double-digit point spreads. Now in any given week, if you do these knockout pools, you're looking at 6 points, 7 points. If you get an 8-point spread in a week, it's huge. These games are all by their nature now very, very close.
It's very hard for me, John, to look at today's NFL, and I call it the quicksand of parity. It's very hard for me to look at this league now and separate, you know, team 5 from team 20. It's just that. There's that many teams in the quicksand.
And you know what's funny? I asked Sam about that yesterday from Pro Football Focus, Sam Monson. I said, Sam, you know, how do you think this playoff situation in the NFC in general is going to play off? He goes, John, honestly, you got like two really good teams. Then all the rest of the teams, you got about 8 or 9 teams all in the same group. Whichever team makes fewest mistakes is going to make the playoffs. And that's how it goes.
And, of course, the other variables are, A, who's injured and available that week.
Uh-huh. Health is big.
And B, as much as I hate to say this, folks, but the circumstances surrounding officials' calls. Because, unfortunately, we have a situation where, you know, they talk about how 5 or 6 calls in a game can make the whole difference between winning and losing. And what we're seeing is that there are human error and human mistakes that come into these games, and they're determining outcomes.
And it's also human mistakes in terms of players, too. I mean, a penalty in the wrong spot, a drop pass, not making a big-time play.
No
I mean,
doubt.
All these things add up, and these small things, one way or the other, Mike, can really determine wins or losses.
So in answer to your question, I will say one thing that kind of answers what you really were asking us. If the Giants can find a way to get a 4-minute offense going, which is why I mentioned it before when John asked me the question.
It would help in close
games. It would really dramatically help it. Mr. Richburg said to me on the post game on MSG the other day, I would rather be on the field to watch the scoreboard click down to 0 and know that we were able to ice a game rather than have to watch the defense try to hold on. He understands it really is the offense's job to lock these suckers down. And if the Giants can actually do that for a change, okay, it will enhance their percentages of becoming a playoff team. That's it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. Here's a question for you, Paul, and this goes back to the close game thing.
Yeah.
How many NFL teams right now that have a record of 500 or better are positive in net points, have outscored their opponents?
I would say probably 1/3 of them.
All right, I will give you the teams that have.
Just give me the number.
Patriots at 7. Well, I got to add it up here.
Okay.
I haven't done it yet. Patriots 7-1, yes. Nobody in the AFC North is over 500. The Ravens and Steelers are both 4-4. Ravens are +1. Steelers are +13. So throw those out. Texans are 5-3, -30 on the year. Mm-hmm. So they're under. Three teams in the AFC West, all over 500, all in the positive point category.
Okay.
And the Chargers, by the way, at 4-5, also +21 this year in terms of points. They've talked about losing heartbreaking games this year.
Yes.
go back and watch some of the end of some of those Chargers games. Wowie. Yes. NFC East, Cowboys way over. Giants and Redskins both 3 under, but they're over 500. That's 3 teams. Lions 5-4, 1 point under, so that's 4. You're looking at 4 teams over 500 with a negative point differential. But they're all right in the mix at almost a flat 0.
You still want to look at me when I say that the 80s were the golden era and tell me that I'm crazy?
I think it went to the early 90s.
Like I said, 93 was the last year. Salary cap started after the 93 season.
Remember, though, you didn't really start getting the destruction of those really good teams until, like, 95. Because they
right.
could hold the rosters together for a couple years.
They held them together for a couple of
right.
years. And then...
Once you got out of that Steve Young Niners teams, the triplet Cowboys teams, and then you got a little bit with the Broncos and Packers, but I don't think those teams even measured up to those early 90 teams. Even the Bills teams of the early 90s were fantastic.
It's my point. It just every year you just look at what's there, and I'm sorry, guys, but the apples in this apple cart are bruised. That's just the way the league is.
But the thing that people like is that when all the apples are bruised, they all have a shot.
That's true. I just don't like the worms in them.
201-939-4513. Tatina with the analogy. We like that. Let's go back to the phones. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Hi, Len. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Len?
Hey, good win last Sunday.
Yep.
It was a nice walk down the escalators, nice ride down the escalators after beating the Eagles.
Nice.
And
wait a minute. Len,
yeah,
you were at the game? Len, you were at the game?
Len's at every game. He's his ticket holder.
No, but why don't we see him at the tailgate?
Because
show?
Len has to be in his seat watching warm-ups. I've had this discussion with Len before. He needs to be in his seat watching the Giants warm up on the field, and he doesn't want to interrupt that with the pregame show.
He could come see us for 5 minutes.
John, you got it absolutely right. And actually, I'm not sitting down. I'm down on the edge in the end zone, standing right behind where the offensive backfield works out and also where the offensive line works out.
Okay.
And it's a great vantage point. And, oh, Lord, I've been doing that in those two stadiums since 1976.
You know what's funny, Len? You know what's funny? I have a regimen myself whenever I come to a game, and especially home games. I always go down to the field first. I check in with the equipment guys, the trainers. I see the players down there. I see some of the stadium people. It's a regular thing that I do. And you know what? What I found out over the years is that I no longer can tell diddly about the game from watching warm-ups.
Oh, well, get out of here. Have you finally accepted that truth?
Yes.
I was trying to convince you for years that you don't get anything out of watching
You're
warm-ups.
Right.
And you always said, John,
I gotta
no,
do it.
I got to watch them.
I got to do it.
When did you make this revelation? I'm sorry, Len. I'll get back to you. This is very important.
Within the last 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
I finally realized that warm-ups aren't going to tell me diddly, except when I could tell in London when we were watching to see if Beckham was warming up and he was
right.
going to be a game-time decision.
If you
decision.
Look at injuries and looking at field conditions, it can be valuable for that.
Field conditions right. are still key for me.
Mm-hmm.
Still a big deal. And,
wow.
yes, injured guys.
How about that?
In fact, I remember you were not in the booth at the moment when Beckham put his receiving gloves on right before kickoff. You
mm-hmm.
had gone back inside, and Papa was with me in the booth. Len, I'm sorry to digress. And
that's okay. That was good. I enjoyed listening to that, Paul.
And when he put on
the
gloves, we knew he was going to play.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The other thing that it helps me to do, Paul, is get my game face on.
Oh, he knows my game face.
Feel,
John knows my game face.
You can begin to feel the energy and the adrenaline flow. You can see them talking to each other. And when I'm telling you, when they huddle and you watch those guys, you want to get in the middle of that huddle, Paul.
Len, the energy starts to flow at 5 a.m. What are you waiting for?
Hey, Len, how about this, though? Real quick. We have one late game at home this year. We have an 8:30 Sunday night game on December 11th against the Dallas Cowboys. On those days, we start our pregame show as soon as the gates open 2 hours before kickoff. So when you're walking in that gate, I want you to walk through that MetLife gate. I want you to stop at the stage for all of 2 minutes before you get to your seat. The players aren't even out on the field yet.
That's true.
I want to see you at the Dallas game, or I'm banning you from the show.
I know exactly where you guys are. I know when where you guys are. I know when Tino's fart, opens up. Paul, you were in that end zone. Well, you were in the SAP zone last weekend. I know where you guys are. I'm going to find you before the season's over.
All right, good.
Okay.
Listen, a couple of comments. Really nice show yesterday, particularly the first part where you had the guy on from Pro Football Focus. That was a nice first half review of the team.
Thank you.
And transitioning to today, and your opening question, John, about where do we have to improve? If you listen closely, I don't necessarily agree with him, but I have a bias. And that's why I don't agree with him. And, he had some things to say about Eli. He did come out and say he thought Eli has got to play better. And I'm just going to expand on that. I think our better players have to play better in the second half of this season. And hopefully we can start that off on Sunday night against a big, strong, tough, physical Bengals team. You know, Pac-Man Jones is going to punch us in the nose on the first play. And see how we react. Vontaze Burfict is going to punch us in the nose on the first play and see how we react.
That's true.
That's going to be a physical, physical football game. I think the Giants can play, but, you wanted to know what unit, who had to play better and so forth. I know you're going to jump on me for this, but I'm not totally satisfied with any unit on this football team yet. I think we can play better. I think we're going to have to play better. It's got to start on Sunday night if we want to go 5-3 on that second half. Hey, I want to give credit to McAdoo. Listen, last week when he told us, or before last week's game, when he told us he was going to get some players acclimated, holy cow, the changes were unbelievable in terms of number of plays, who was playing, and so forth.
Not for the defensive ends.
I mean, I want to give the guy credit. Well, I don't think we've ever seen that before. It's not a knock on Coughlin. It's not a knock on Fossil or any of the other coaches we've ever had. I'm just saying, mid-season changes, that was something, and it worked out really well. It worked out really well. Hey, listen, thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Len.
All right, Len.
A chance to talk about some.
Appreciate it. You know, one thing about it, I know a lot of fans have said, oh, we love the fact you're trying to get everybody involved and all that stuff. The second one of those bench players, though, makes a mistake, do you know what we're going to get on Monday morning? Why the hell is that guy on the field? We've gotten it how many times before?
Absolutely.
It's like, why is B.J. Like, imagine if B.J. Goodson got a couple defensive snaps in that game. Okay. What happens if on that particular play, they run Darren Sproles on a circle route, he's isolated, and they score a touchdown on him? Is that out of the realm of possibility? Is it even B.J. Goodson's fault? No, it's not. He can't cover Darren Sproles. But do you know what every single call we're going to get the next day is? Why the hell is B.J. Goodson on the field?
No question.
It sounds good in practice, and I like it. I like the idea, and I hope you guys do too. But just as a preface, and I'm going to foreshadow, if one of these young guys that's getting some run, which is a good thing, makes a mistake, I don't want to get four lines lit up on a Monday morning bitching and whining about the young guy being on the field.
I'm with you, John. I will say this. I was not only impressed with the various player deployments that were used the other day, but I also thought that the guys who were asked to do more handled themselves very responsibly. I did not see...
For example, who? Who'd you like?
I didn't see any mental errors from Joel Adams.
Okay.
I didn't see any mental errors out of Paul Perkins.
I didn't notice any either.
All right. Mm-hmm. I did not see, well, again, Adams has been in for several games now, so that's not necessarily new, but he was smart. He's not always physically capable of doing everything, but he was in the right place. He was where he had to be to attempt to make a play. Roger Lewis, yes, he did have one drop. Yes, he did get cracked on one play and was unable to hold on to the ball, but he also caught a touchdown pass. And it looked like that he and Eli were on the same page. Those are all good things. I didn't see the only guy who, to me, looked like he was kind of a fish out of water, and it was disappointing, was Eli Apple, who had a really rough game. And as a result, the coach took him out because he wasn't playing well.
Run or pass?
No, he wasn't playing well, John. He missed tackles. He wasn't in the right spot. He looked like he was confused. So coach said, okay, chalk it up to a bad day. Dust yourself off. Come back the next game and show us what you did earlier this year. I have no problem with that. He's a rookie. It's going to happen. Bad day. But the other young guys, Brett Jones. I mean, Richburg told me after the game, he did not have one communication faux pas with Brett Jones for the entire 50 plays he was in.
And I'll tell you what, I asked Sam about that yesterday, and he said Pro Football Focus has graded Jones out really well. When he's got on the field, including this game last Sunday, when he's been asked to get in there, and again, he said it's a small sample size, you can't take too much out of
it. No doubt.
That he has done exactly what the team has needed him to do. And he also had some very nice things to say in that game, generally, about, you know, how the Giants defensively, you know, managed to keep the Eagles out of the end zone. He really raved about how good their red zone defense has been all year. And you know what? If I can go back in time, I want to erase my what the Giants have to continue to do well answer, and I'm going to go with red zone defense. Because I think as much as anything else, so far this year, Paul, red zone defense, and I believe they're first in the league now after last week. They held the Eagles to 2 of 6 in the red zone. It has been so important to keep these teams out of the end zone. Because if you look at the Giants' yards allowed, it's good, but it's not great. But what's made the difference is that they haven't scored touchdowns. And a lot of that, as you mentioned, has to do with the run defense.
That's where it starts.
Absolutely. So I think red zone defense is something that's been very underrated this year. I don't think enough people have talked about it. Because to me, that above all else has been the reason the Giants are 5-3. And right now would be the fifth seed in the NFC in the playoffs.
You know, John, I have to tell you, when Len says he's not happy with any of the units, I got to shake my head at that, because I think that the corners in particular have been really good. I do think that, especially as we move into the second stage or second quarter of the season, the defensive line has picked up its play in terms of the pass rush. They've been playing the run well all year, but the pass rush has been better in the second quarter. What are we looking at here?
On the whiteboard, I never noticed this before. We have an old whiteboard over there, and I see this big thing, PDOT for president. It's just funny. I never noticed
that
before.
I'm guessing that was Hynoski.
Was he? You think so?
Yeah, Hynoski's a big fan.
Hey, he has you with 287 electoral votes. That's pretty good. That's why I was laughing. I've never noticed that before.
I never noticed it. And then
sorry,
folks. You just had me looking at it.
All right. By the way, we have a couple open lines if you want to get in at 201-939-4513. Ash in New Jersey is up next. Ash, what's going on? Ash, you're on line 3. How are you, buddy?
Hello?
Hey, Dave, do we have Ash on the line on line 3? Ash going once, Ash going twice, and Ash, give us a call back. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. When you take a look at the rest of the NFC, Paul, who do you think is the biggest threat to the Giants to making it into the playoffs? I'm not throwing the division away. They're only 2 out from the Cowboys. They have the tiebreaker. If they beat Dallas in that game, they have a great chance to win the division. If they lose to Dallas in that game, it's probably going to be really, really tough. But just from a wild card perspective, who do you think are the biggest threats?
It's a gimme for me.
Packers?
No, it's Washington. Okay. Giants already lost the game to Washington.
But tiebreakers don't matter with the Redskins because they have a tie.
Yeah, but they've already lost to them once. Giants play them the last game of the regular season in D.C., and it could be flexed out into a primetime game.
Okay.
And that could be a one and in or a one and out.
Okay.
So for me, I have to say that's got to be the game.
The Vikings or Packers don't concern you?
Well, they could.
Because they've already lost to those two teams, too. That's the only reason why I bring them up.
They concern me.
Yes.
How could they not concern me? But, again, I'm looking at the potential of the last game of the regular season being a playoff game.
Winning your end.
So that I have to say that. I have to. Just because of the way the schedule falls.
Who has a better chance of making a run? The Arizona Cardinals or the Carolina Panthers or neither?
I would say
both schedules are pretty tough. I looked at them yesterday.
I would say only because Carolina, to me, is a more mentally tough team than the Cardinals are.
And I think you probably have more faith in Cam Newton than you do Carson Palmer, who has been pretty inconsistent this year.
Well, see, anybody who watches this show knows I'm not a Cam Newton fan. I understand he was the MVP of the regular season last year, and I would have voted for him too, but I am not a Cam Newton fan. I would have reluctantly voted for him. I think he runs around too much. I think he takes too many hits. I think he tries to play macho and tough guy, and it's going to hurt him eventually. I wouldn't be surprised if Cam Newton gets knocked out of a game in the next couple of weeks and doesn't finish the season.
Not out of the
then where's Carolina?
Understood.
So, you know, that's a gamble. But I do think as a team, they're more mentally tough and probably even more physically tough than the Cardinals are.
Okay.
But that's still a risk.
Do you believe in the Lions?
I heard the other day, you know, I'm a big serious guy. I like Pat Kerwin. I think Pat Kerwin is the best NFL radio analyst in the game. And he was talking about the Lions and saying that Stafford right now is as hot as any quarterback in the league.
He's playing well.
He is. And he was saying that he believes that that Lions team is primed to make a jump into playoff contention. So I'm going to base that, my comment on him, and say that I'm concerned about them. But I have not seen them play this year. Not once.
Yeah, neither have I. Now that
so
I think about it.
It's almost like I'm going blind on that.
I watched some of their game against Philly when they beat Philly a couple weeks ago, but only about a quarter. Yeah, you're right. I haven't watched much of Detroit either. But I'll tell you what, me and Lance talked about this last week too, Paul. I think taking – and Ash, you call back. We'll get to you in a second. I think taking Calvin Johnson off that team forced Stafford into becoming a more fundamentally sound quarterback because he didn't have that, you know, safety blanket where you just chuck it up to Calvin and let him make a play. Which, by the way, not a bad plan. But it doesn't, it doesn't make you go through your progressions, read the defense,
right,
and do what you need to do.
Well, for me – they've had a lot of salary cap hits that have hurt their defense.
Oh, their defensive line used to be fantastic. They lost Sue. They lost Fairley.
And you say, well, how could they possibly, you know, be better? How could they possibly be a playoff contender or even in the conversation
right,
when they've lost these salary cap hits? But the fact is they're playing good team ball, and they're young, and they seem to believe. So I don't know. They're a curiosity to me is what I'm telling you. They're a curiosity to me.
So you're not sure you haven't bought or sold on them yet because
no,
you haven't seen them
it's
play.
A wait and see.
And I'll tell you what, that could be a really important game for the Giants now.
It could be.
In December. Could be essential.
Could be.
You could have four virtual playoff games in a row with Dallas, Detroit, Philly, and Washington. All could be in the mix there trying to make the playoffs. And that everything could be on the line for all four of those teams in December.
Exactly, though, why this four-game stretch – right now, this four-game stretch, Philly, Cincinnati, Chicago, and Cleveland, exactly why this stretch.
And then Pittsburgh.
But I'll say the four games. The most important four-game stretch of the Giants' season.
And you got to go minimum 3-1 in those
minimum
four.
3-1.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think you got to go. And you already got one. So now you just got to go 2-1 the rest of the way. And again, 4-0 would be great. But if you go 3-1, you're in pretty good shape.
That's all you want to be able to do is to set the foundation
yep,
so that you have a realistic chance to make a run. But if your foundation is soft, like a wet Kleenex tissue, you run the risk of falling through it.
Let's go to Ash. He's back on the line. Ash, what's going on, pal?
How you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
How are you?
Good. I'm a big Giants fan, obviously. The offensive line has actually been well than we expected coming to the season.
In pass protection, yes.
Yeah. Running game could use some work, and obviously maybe it's not just offensive line. It could be the tight ends and someone missing their block. But
yep,
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
I know Tua is going to be out for a little while, but when he comes back, I mean, I know we lost Whitlock and the guy from the Steelers that we signed.
Johnson. Yeah, Will Johnson.
Yeah. So, I was thinking, let's say Pugh comes back and he starts playing. What if we had Brett Jones play more fullback? I mean, he did that against Cowboys, and, you know, we actually had success. And then my second question is, what's the status of Will Beatty? Is it because, like, everyone else is doing pretty good in the pass block that he's just, like, the backup right now, or is there something else?
Or maybe Will Beatty's not that good anymore. I mean, remember, he came off two pretty serious injuries, and he's a year off those two injuries. Maybe he's not where he used to be.
You know, Coach Solari, the assistant here, the offensive line coach, he said flat out that Bobby Hart is one of our best five offensive linemen, and that's why he's starting.
Right.
Which tells you then that Marshall Newhouse and Will Beatty are not starters anymore. And the fact that Marshall Newhouse got on the field ahead of Beattie last week tells you he's number six.
That's correct.
That's, you know, that's just what it is.
And Paul, how about his first question about Jones being used as a fullback?
You know what? They used him as the H-back fullback in Dallas in that four-minute offense, and then they scrapped it and decided that they did not want to go there. And now that Brett Jones is going to be the guard for at least the foreseeable future, it looks like, to me, that eliminates that entirely because he's got to worry about being a guard. And I don't think that I'd want to mess with him trying to move him back again, because even when Pugh comes back, this kid has not been training as an H-back or a fullback. He's been training as a guard. I would not fuss with him anymore. I would rather just go jumbo package. If you want this, here's what I'm going to do for you. If you want to bring...
Sound like a car salesman.
Well, he's trying to come up with an idea to enhance the line and the blocking.
I understand.
If you want, when Pugh comes back, I got no problem either leaving Newhouse as the tight end, you know, in the jumbo tight end package, or if you really want to put Jones back in that role and make him the H-back again, I guess I would do that, but I'm more inclined to let Newhouse be the sixth offensive lineman and use an unbalanced line with the jumbo tight end. We saw it the other day. Yep. I'm more inclined to go there.
Ash, thank you for the call, pal.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513, Jeff in Rhode Island. He's up next. Hi, Jeffrey.
How you doing, fellas?
What's up, buddy?
I'm having a hard time seeing how any Giants fan could really have any reasonable expectations about us going to the playoffs this year with the condition of our running game. I mean, you know, John, I've talked to you quite a few times about this, and everybody says it's a passing league, and yeah, it sure is. But on the other hand, to see what the Dallas Cowboys are doing, and anybody that thinks that the running game is not relevant anymore isn't watching football.
And by the way, Jeff, throw in this too, the Patriots ran the ball an awful lot the first four games this year when Tom Brady wasn't playing too.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it's an important thing, but I just don't think any real Giants fan should have any real expectations about us even getting to the playoffs because you know, we just don't have the running game. And
Jeff,
I think that's when you make the team one-dimensional, you're just looking for trouble.
You know how old school I am. Come on, let's not kid ourselves.
Too.
You get it.
I'm old school too,
all right,
buddy. I'm
a
little bit older than you are.
Okay, but I'm going to sit here and tell you that it does not eliminate your opportunities as much as you think it does. Because of the way the game is constructed nowadays, and because it is such a passing league, and because so much is determined with scheme and with speed and with athleticism, the bottom line is, yes, you make it harder on yourselves when you don't have the running game. I totally preach that. I mean, I'm singing to the choir. However, don't be sitting there shaking your head saying that it can't be done and that you're whistling past the graveyard, because that's not true. The Giants were 32nd in the NFL in running when they won that second Super Bowl against the Patriots.
They were better in the playoffs, though.
They were better.
There were a lot of other circumstances involved there with this.
Sure they were.
You know?
But the point is, you make it harder and more difficult on yourselves, but it doesn't make it impossible in today's NFL. So please don't be so down on them.
No, I'm just having a difficulty with it, that's all. So I want them to go to playoffs, believe me.
It's all right, Jeff. Smile. Everything's going to be okay. The team's 5-3 in second place, and right now they're in the postseason.
It's kind of like having to swallow the string beans. You know, you may not like them, but it doesn't have to ruin your whole meal.
I know. If only the season, only the regular season ended today. But guess what?
It doesn't.
Have a good day, fellas.
All right.
You're all about the metaphors today, man. You're rolling. I got wet Kleenex. I got eating string beans.
You're right.
I got
all this
not
down?
Liking the worms. I'm going to go back and clip all these and take them out.
Oh. Okay. Whatever. Who else you got here today?
Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Joe, how are you?
Hey, you guys. My thing is, I'm hearing the Giants can't do this. The Giants, they don't have a running game just as if they, you know, their offense can't block or something. I just mean, you got to look at every team. Which is the best rounded team? You know what I mean? Dallas, okay, they have their offense, but they're subject on defense, you know? So, and I really think with the tight end coming in into the game, Adams hopefully growing up in Perkins, and that, you know, even I was glad to see a pitch. That was, a pitch out to him. That was the first pitch out I think we had all year.
Hey, you know, Joe, hey, Joe, do me a favor. Get off speakerphone. It sounds like you're on speaker. We're having a little trouble hearing you, pal.
Okay. I'll hold it. Yes, I am.
Hey, there you go. Now you sound better, Joe.
You know,
there we go.
The other day when who was in here the other day? Was it Howard Cross? It might have been Howard or it might have been David Deal, John. I was doing the show with one of those guys last week, and he said, name me the teams in the NFL that can actually sit back and say they're satisfied with their offensive line, and they don't really need any improvements in their starting five.
Well, obviously Dallas.
Okay.
I think Oakland's probably pretty happy with the offensive line.
I would agree with that.
I think the Packers' offensive line, especially in pass protection, has been excellent this year. Aaron Rodgers had a ton of time. I think they're probably pretty happy with it. Boy. You know, and that's the thing.
If you can get past five, I'll be shocked.
I don't know if I can do that. I mean, the Patriots have had offensive line issues. The Steelers' offensive line is pretty good, but Ben Roethlisberger just got hurt, so they're probably not too happy about that.
Dolphins has been inconsistent.
Yeah, but they've run the ball well with Ajayi. That's fair.
So, you know, but inconsistent.
Bottom line, and your overall point, Paul, is correct. And we've heard a lot of people that watch a lot of tape. Pete Prisco is always big on this online. He watches a lot of tape for CBS Sports. All the Pro Football Focus guys talk about this too. Offensive line play in the league is a huge issue. It's a problem. It just is. There aren't a lot of good offensive linemen anymore, whether it's because they're utilized in college, they're not trained properly, the lack of practice time at the NFL level with no contact. You know, take your pick. The offensive line play in the NFL is not what it used to be.
I look at, too, playmakers. I really think we have the playmakers, especially in that defensive backfield, and we're really the last few weeks getting them, you know, the turnovers, the interceptions, and look at the other teams. They're not doing that. That's a big thing there, too. Two players I'd like to see, you know, we brought in there, or you're talking about players playing, you know. I'd like to see Darkwell get a few carries, too. You know, I always thought he hit the hole quick, you know. I don't know why it seems like he must be in the doghouse or so. It just don't seem like he gets his chance there.
Joe, honestly, I don't think he's in the doghouse. I think they want to give Paul Perkins a chance, and Darkwell gets used a ton on special teams.
Okay,
and you know what? To be honest, if the Giants' running game is not going well, and most weeks it's not, they're probably not going to run the ball more than 20 times anyway. So
and
how are you going to divvy it up?
That's how it's been. I mean, they've rushed it between 20 and 25 times, and they're throwing it between 35 and 40. It's just the way it goes.
I just like the way he runs. It doesn't seem like he hits the hole quick, and he doesn't need much of a hole. And
I agree with that.
There, so,
I agree with
Darkwa.
That.
So, and another guy, well, maybe we'll see him get a chance. I don't know if he doesn't know the playbook real good as Travis King there or so. You know,
Tavares
maybe he'll
King.
Get some chance this time here or so, you know. I thought earlier in the season he was ahead of Lewis there, but
he's been active, right?
He has been inactive a couple of times, and when he has been active, if you notice the snaps he gets, he's in there to run block.
Absolutely.
Because he's
him and Dwayne Harris, they bring both those guys in the run block.
They're tough, physical guys
yep.
who they'll scrap with you trying to get people blocked on the edge.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. But I just want to say again, we have playmakers, and, you know, every other team has problems, too. So this is going to be a tough game. Stay away from penalties. Like, play a clean game as much as possible, and we'll be in it.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
All right, Paul, I'm going to rapid fire you with some things here.
Okay, we got a few
minutes,
right?
You have the last 6 or 7 minutes of the show.
Oh, all right. Go ahead. What do you got?
Is A.J. Green right now the best wide receiver in football?
You know, it's hard to argue against him. I mean, here's the thing. When people ask me that question about Brown and Beckham of the Steelers, obviously, and they always seem to put those two guys together.
Yeah, you could throw Julio Jones in the mix, too.
Different type of receiver.
Well, that's the thing. I think in terms of body type and the way they play, I think it's Beckham and Brown, and then I think it's Green and Jones.
Right.
They're both kind of shaped the same way.
And that's why, for me, I kind of separate them a little bit and say, well, those guys are in that bin and those guys are in that bin, and I can't really get my grips on saying that one bin's better than the other. They're both elite, and they're just from a different bin on the shelf.
I think that's fair. Tyler Eifert, best tight end Giants will face this year?
Oh, I can't do that yet.
You got your schedule right there.
Yeah.
And then the only other guy that would be in the mix is Witten. But I think given his age. Oh, no. How about Jordan
Redskins.
Reed? Jordan Redskins. Reed. That's right. I forgot about Reed. That's a good point.
He's the man for me.
Oh, I think that's fair. I think that's a good answer.
He's the man for me.
I think that's a good answer.
You know. And you know what? Yeah, I'm sticking with that one. I'm sticking with him because I don't want to disrespect the Eagles guy.
Ertz.
I don't want to disrespect
Ertz. He's
good too. Because he made some plays against them the other day.
Oh, yeah, big game.
But Reed's the guy for me.
Okay. I think another good rapid-fire one for you.
You're going to use up all our factor fictions that we're going to tape over the next few weeks.
That's
don't do
okay.
That.
It's fine.
Don't do that. I actually wanted to bring up one particular topic
please.
About
Go
the game.
Go right ahead. What do you got for me?
Well, about the game.
About the Bengals or the Eagles game?
No, the Bengals game.
Okay.
The Bengals game.
Sure, what do you got?
If you are the Bengals, and I had this conversation with somebody actually in the last 24 hours.
Yes.
Do you put Pac-Man on Beckham?
I think the better question is do you constantly leave a safety over the top on Beckham? So I think once you do that, the corner you put on him isn't as important. And honestly, and I've said this before, and frankly, I'm not trying to give away hints here.
Remember now, the Giants moved Beckham around a little bit more this past week.
Right, so it makes it harder to do that. I get that.
So,
but if I'm a DC, that's the first thing I do on my defensive game plan. I say I will never have Beckham manned up on somebody. I don't care where he lines up. I'm having a safety, whatever side of the field Beckham's on, I'm having a safety over the top, making sure he doesn't get deep, because that's how the Giants score points.
And, of course, the Giants will say, if you want to do that, we got Cruz, we got Shepard, and we'll take our chances.
But how many times have the Giants been able to win games by throwing to those two guys?
Good point.
And you know what? I think they can do it. I think the Giants are capable of winning games by throwing those two guys. But if I'm a defensive coordinator,
prove it to me.
I make them prove it.
Show me.
The same way I say, you know what? We're going to put six guys in the box. Run the ball.
Although, again, it was Cruz's winning touchdown catch that beat Dallas, and it was Cruz's catch that helped beat the Saints.
Very
true. So
that's
fair. I mean, to some degree, they have proven it, but not maybe as much
does. Well, they started fast the first two games. Since those first two games, they have not done as much.
And Odell's done more.
Correct. Correct.
I mean, I was talking to someone, too, the other day about Beckham, and they said to me, well, you know, did Beckham have a great game? And I said, well, he caught two touchdown passes. Okay, but he only caught like four or five balls for, what was it, 55, 60 yards?
Four catches on 10 targets, which is not a great percentage.
Right, which is not like his typical great game.
Right.
But he caught two touchdown passes and they won. Yeah. Isn't that good enough?
I think it is. By the way, one interesting stat, I brought this up to Lance at the end of yesterday's show, and I'd like to get your take on why this is the case.
Okay.
Since Beckham came in the league, okay?
Yes.
In his first year, he caught 70% of the passes thrown in his direction.
Right.
Last year, he caught 61% of the passes thrown in his direction. Mm-hmm. This year, he's down to catching only 55% of the passes thrown in his direction. Why do you think that number is going down?
Well, he's now more on film, and teams are doing more things to him. And
but he was on film. He was on film last year already.
Yeah, but
I get the drop from
the numbers going down.
Well,
because teams now know more.
Right, but I get the drop from year one to year two. I get that drop. But okay. I think once you're in year two, you know Beckham's a monster, right? I mean, you know last year what he's capable of. Why did it drop another 6% from last year to this year? Is it simply drops? Because he has had more drops this year. That might move it up just 3 or 4 percentage points on its own.
It could. I don't know.
Or overthrows by Eli. He hasn't been as accurate this year. Another one.
Well, and you know what? And if you just say a little bit there and a little bit there,
that might do it, right?
There, that could do that.
Yeah,
that could do that.
Because I just thought it was an interesting stat. I was looking at it the other day.
Because I would agree with you that you know, Eli has certainly been inconsistent through the first half of the season. I would not say that he's been poor, but he has been inconsistent in spots.
Well, I
think he would say himself he'd rather be a little bit sharper.
And I was going to do this earlier in the show because Sam, one of the callers, brought it up. Sam was pretty rough on Eli yesterday, breaking it down from watching the tape. And his point was that this year, and he said this is a change from other seasons. He said, for example, back in 2011, when he was under pressure, Eli Manning, one of the best seasons a quarterback has ever had when he's facing pressure.
Correct.
He said this year when he's facing pressure,
worse than league.
He has literally fallen off of a cliff
production-wise. That's true.
When he has faced pressure. And he says it's hard for me to explain it because it hasn't always been like that in years past. But this year when he's faced pressure, his numbers, like you said, have been just brutal.
I can explain it to Sam. Get him on the phone.
No, explain it to me. I want to hear it.
Oh, okay. It's
send him the tape, okay?
It's very simple. It is very, 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 very simple.
Yes.
No Shane Vereen and tremendous drop-off in production from the tight ends.
Okay. I buy that.
Because
that's fair.
Shane Vereen, one of the best third-down backs and a great safety valve, not there. Who is? Nobody's replaced him, really. Nobody's really replaced him in this offense. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, Larry Donnell was a 60-plus catch threat.
Right.
Six-touchdown catch threat. What have the Giants tight ends done this year?
Bupkis?
Averaging 7.5 yards a catch and one touchdown between them. That's not production.
That's not fair. And that's a good explanation.
That's why
you're here.
Get him on the phone.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul will be back tomorrow with either David Deal or Howard Cross. I'm arm wrestle. See who gets the toast for you?
The loser gets to sit with me.
Well, of course.
Because that means they get a headache.
Yeah, because they both try really hard not to host with you. All right, everybody, we'll see you tomorrow. Later on today, we got media availabilities. Go to Giants.com. You can check that out. Also, if you go to Giants.com, you can check out the transcripts of the conference calls yesterday from the three Giants that are going into the Ring of Honor on Monday night, Ernie Accorsi, Tom Coughlin, and Justin Tuck. I didn't see it, by the way, this morning really quick because we started a minute late. Let me just give one more thing to you.
Okay.
Someone told me this secondhand. I didn't hear it myself.
Yeah.
But I know you watch NFL Network in the morning sometimes.
I tried to, a little bit at least.
Did you watch any of Good Morning Football this morning?
I did not see it this morning.
All right, somebody told me that there's a rumor going around that Tom could be in line to pick up the Jacksonville head coach job if they move on from their current coach, which doesn't shock me, but they love him down there.
Not a concept that comes out of left field.
No, I agree with that. But it was something – it's the first thing that I've heard talk – first time I've heard it talked about in a national media setting where I think Chris Canty actually brought it up. That, again, I'm hearing all the secondhand folks. If I'm wrong, please get on Twitter and correct me, call me an idiot. This is what somebody told me was said on Good Morning Football this morning. So that's all I got.
Hey.
And by the way, for that Ring of Honor ceremony at halftime on Monday night, go to Giants.com. It will be streamed live, so you can check it out. They'll have little videos for each guy. Bob Papa will do the emceeing of that ceremony. It'll be a good time. And does that mean Paul Dottino gets about 90 seconds of play-by-play into the second quarter?
No, I've asked and I've been told that Bob's going to do everything from the booth. Yeah, I'm going to miss out. That's all right.
You should have your wife bringing some baked goods or something. Bribe Bob to go down to the field.
I got two games when the Olympics were in, so it's okay.
You can take what you can get?
I'll take what I can get.
All right. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Everybody have a great day.